The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, my next guest is Ciara Geraghty, who began writing at the age of 34 when she had two young children at home and was working in insurance. Now she's a best-selling novelist. She's just published her 10th adult book, which is called Late Learner. It's published by HarperCollins. Ciara, good morning and welcome.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Pat.
This is not really autobiography, Late Learner, you know. You started writing at 34.
Well, I'm a bit of a late learner myself, you know.
That's what I mean.
Yes. Although it isn't autobiography. But yeah, I didn't start writing until I was 34. And most writers I know knew that they wanted to write novels by the time they were, you know, in school kind of thing, in primary school. But it never dawned on me. I was always a very avid reader. It never dawned on me that I could be a writer. I
didn't. So what was the turning point when you thought I'd better do something?
So I was 34. I was a mother of two small children. I worked full time as an insurance loss adjuster, and I suddenly realised that I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I was already grown up, so it felt like a bit of a problem, you know. But I was really down about it, you know. I just thought, oh, well, this is it now. We have a mortgage, and we have bills, and we have two small children.
You could see your future unfolding in front of you predictably.
Yes, and not in a great way. So I decided, actually, in the course of my job as a loss adjuster, I was investigating an insurance claim out in Plunkett College in Whitehall. And I got chatting to the principal there, and he was bragging on his adult education program. And he said, do you want to see the syllabus or take the syllabus home with you? And I said, fine. And at the time I was thinking, maybe I'll do something. Maybe I'll do a night course or something. It was very, you know, fortuitous that I met him then, because they do have an amazingly extensive program out there. And I decided I would do that. I would take an hour out of my week and do something that was entirely unrelated to my work and my life. And I knew I wanted to do something creative, but I didn't know what.
Now, people listen to this, she's already got a very busy job as a loss adjuster. She's got two small kids at home. And she's embarking on something else. And you do also play a musical instrument.
I did, but at the time now I didn't. My violin was collecting cobwebs and dust under the bed, and had been for several years.
So now, people think you're multitasking. You're one of these dynamic people who can do 20 things.
I suppose I was doing all these things, but I wasn't doing anything that was just purely for just frivolous, as I thought at the time, and just, you know, something entirely unrelated, as I say, to anything else in my life. And I was looking for something. There isn't any doubt about it. And I was very lucky I stumbled upon the course. And I was also very lucky that the teacher I had, Emma Claire Sweeney, was an unusual combination in that she was a writer and she was also an amazing teacher. So that I think you can do, most people can do one or the other. Few people can do both. She could, and she was incredibly encouraging. I think without her, I may never have embarked on it.
Now, the question of how good you were, and fairly quickly, because obviously you're now prolific. I mean, looking back to Leaving Cert and so on, were you always getting A pluses for your essays?
This is a funny question, because I got a D in English in the Leaving Certificate. So all the kids listening who are waiting for their results next week, worry not, because it is not the end of the world. I got a very mediocre Leaving Cert. And really, I wasn't ambitious in career-wise back then. What I wanted was to travel and to have my own flat, which nowadays sounds very, very ambitious, you know.
Yeah.
But back then it was entirely possible to do both, and I did both, and that's what I wanted to do. I hated essay writing in school because they took so long. And also the subjects were so boring that we were given to write about. And all I ever really wanted to do was to be out and about with my pals. So I would scribble them off. Now, there was, you know, there was a couple of them that would have, you know, I remember being asked to read them out in front of the class. But it was never anything I really thought about.
But had you been given interesting stuff to write about, you might have been in front of the class reading them out all the time.
Maybe.
Who knows?
I don't know. Yeah. I just wasn't that studious kid, you know.
Okay, now, when did you decide to give up the job because writing was going to be it?
Yeah, I mean, my first book I wrote under cover of darkness, really, because I was working and the kids were small. So I'd literally get everybody to bed and then I'd sit down at the kitchen table and write. And because it was also new, like, I kind of like that period of my life was one of the best times, and I kind of liken it to
kids
four.
Would go to bed on time.
Yeah, well, it's just in terms of the writing, because I liken it to falling in love. It was that kind of potent. I was incredibly excited about it, because obviously I really probably should have been a writer all the time, but so it was all inside, it was all, you know, condensed, and it was just, you know, pouring out onto the page. So it was a real joy to write my first novel. Now the second novel, like the difficult second album kind of thing, because just because you write one, you don't know, can you write another one? And I was scheduled, I had my youngest daughter, my youngest child, Grace, and I was scheduled to go back to work in the insurance company. And the publishers rang me 1 week before I went back with a new contract. Would I like to write another two books? And it was enough money that I could then...
It made it viable.
Yeah. I could ring my boss and say, I won't be back. Sorry. Bye now. Good luck.
So that was the beginning of a very, as I say, prolific writing career. You write about what you know. That's what you've always said in any interview I've read that you've given. Write about what you know. The character, the principal character in your new book, Rhonda, is living what you call a small life.
Well, yes, in terms of Rhonda, we meet her. She's 44. I describe the book as a sort of a coming of age, a coming of middle age story. You know, Rhonda, she cycles to and from her job as a healthcare assistant, a carer in a nursing home. She wanted to be a nurse, and that didn't happen for her. That fell through. She was engaged to be married. That, you know, broke.
That had a bad ending.
That had a pretty bad ending. And so she lives at home with her mother, who's a hypochondriac. And she's happy enough when we meet her. You know, she doesn't have any great expectations. I think she has accepted the fact that she's not going to be a nurse, and she's not going to be in a relationship, you know, an enduring, loving relationship. I think because, you know, when adult children live at home, you kind of assume the role that you always had as, you know, growing up. So there's a sort of a case of arrested development there.
Now, she has a
well.
Very successful sister.
She's a super successful sister, Margot. Margot is incredibly dynamic. She's a working mother. She's just kind of got it all, you know, one of those kind of women. And so, you know, sort of looks down on Rhonda and her small life, as Margot would describe it. And so basically what happens is Rhonda's hypochondriac mother, Annie, has a very understanding and slightly enabling GP who moves to Howth, which is where Margot lives. And so Annie decides she's going to sell the house in Marino and move into a granny flat in Margot's back garden. Now, Margot only made this offer, you know, when she was kind of two-thirds the way down a bottle of wine last Christmas. She didn't really mean it, and she's sort of horrified by the idea. So she decides she's going to teach Rhonda how to drive. And Rhonda does not want to drive. She was involved in a horrible car accident when she was 14. She's going to teach her how to drive, and then Rhonda will be able to drive her mother to and from her various medical appointments. And so Rhonda won't have to move, because, I mean, she works as a carer, so she earns just barely above minimum wage. There's no way she can afford a mortgage. Mm. There's no way she can afford to rent anywhere in the area. So she really has no choice but to learn how to drive. So the novel is sort of structured around the 12 driving lessons that Margot gives her.
Her adventures, it expands her life, makes her life bigger.
That's it, yeah.
Now the nursing home end of things, you say write about what you know, your own experience of having someone in a nursing home, a positive one, I presume.
Yeah, well, as positive as these things can go,
because it's an end of life situation for many, many people.
That's it.
I often think when they talk about nursing home, it's supposed to be your home from home, a new home where you're just surrounded by more care.
Yeah.
But often you get the sense that people are not free to treat it as their own home.
Absolutely not. And it's a very medicalized environment, you know. And like my father was lucky because my mother was his primary carer he had dementia for 13 years. Now, many of those years it was kind of fine. It was really more the last, say, 6 years that he would have required, you know, much more intensive care. And my mother was his primary carer, and we were all very lucky that she was able to do that. Yeah. And it was only the last 6 months that she found herself unable any longer to care for him. And really, there should have been more options. Like, what would have been amazing would be, you know, if we had carers coming into the house so that he could have stayed at home. But, you know, she was, I think Mam was eligible for maybe 1 or 2 hours a week of carers
not
coming in.
Not enough to
absolutely
make it viable.
Absolutely not enough. And he needed way more help than that. So he went in. And as I say, he was lucky in that he was there only for 6 months. Because I know people are there literally 10 years and more sometimes.
At the nursing home environment, people get worried when they see a Primetime Investigates programme about nursing homes. They get very concerned that maybe the things that they see is not the full picture.
That's it. And as someone who has left a loved one in a nursing home and walking out after visiting, it's always, no matter how lovely the nursing home seems on the surface, it's always in the back of your mind, you know, that when you're not there.
What goes on when I'm gone?
What goes on when I'm gone? Because, you know, nursing homes, they're private companies, and they're, you know, objective is to make a profit for their shareholders. So, you know, I just think care and compassion as commodities is just not a viable thing to do.
And when you consider the Fair Deal scheme, which is costing the state obviously a lot of money, you know, you think, is there not a better way perhaps that the state could spend this money by providing the care itself with all the kind of guarantees you get or you should get with state care.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, my first experience with a nursing home was when I was 15. I was in TY and I did some work experience in a nursing home. It was a public nursing home in Fairview. And I just remember it was so homely. It was back in the days when it was the nurses looking after the residents. There wasn't really any carers as such. Now it's the nurses seem, certainly in my father's nursing home, they seem to be exercised with the medication, the doling out of it and all of that sort of stuff. They don't really...
But relatively few of them, you see, and
relatively
a lot of care
of them and then a lot of carers. Whereas back in the day, it was all nurses. And I remember, like, the residents would be smoking in the nursing home. But it just felt like, you know, a real home away
it
from
home. It was a home, yeah.
It was a home. And, like, some of them couldn't actually physically smoke, so the nurses would light up their smokes for them and then, you know, hop them into their mouths. And then I remember, actually, the nurses having races with the wheelchairs down the corridors. But the residents would love it. Like, it was fun. Do you know what I mean? I mean, obviously, that would not be allowed now.
Health and safety.
Health and safety rules. But it really felt like, I remember me and my two pals, Ellie and Carr, the three of us worked there for this week. And, like, we really, really loved it, even though it was the first time I accidentally saw a dead body down in sort of a makeshift morgue in the home. But we still talk about it all these years later, the crack we had, you know. Whereas now, they're very sterile environments, I find.
Anyway, your late learner, Rhonda, it's an intriguing tale of how her life expands from that small life into something rather larger. Your own life, of course, has expanded dramatically from an insurance loss adjuster to being a prolific novelist. Are you still enjoying the writing as much?
I love the writing part of it. Yeah, the publishing part of it is much more difficult.
Coming and talking to me and things like that.
I know, Pat. This is fine. But it's an incredibly competitive landscape, so it is hard. But what I love now, back in September I'll be back up to my little
attic.
Writing
well,
away.
The current book, A Late Learner, with a little subtitle, Better Late Than Never, which is maybe a salutary lesson for everybody. It's published by HarperCollins, and its author, Ciara Geraghty, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.